Hey, what's going on, everyone? Welcome to the Over the Cap podcast. It's March 6, 2022, and this is Jason Fitzgerald. You can find me on Twitter at Jason_OTC, or you can email me whenever you want, jason@overthecap.com. I'm always delayed on the email side, so usually Twitter is easier, but those can always get lost in the shuffle as well. So anyway, we've got 2 weeks in a row of doing a podcast here. Kind of surprising, right? Not going to bother with the edits again this week. I figure we'll just kind of get this one in the books. Doing this on a Sunday night rather than the Saturday. I just got a little busy yesterday, so I couldn't sneak it in. So I'll do this one tonight, which means no beer. But hopefully we'll have a beer of the week back next week, which will probably be Dogfish Head. But you never know. It could be a Southern Tier or something else that might sneak in, depending on what I see in the store that night if I don't have anything sitting in the fridge. So the Combine finished up this week. I didn't attend, as I mentioned last time, and it was pretty uneventful. I think it says a lot for free agency this year. This is not a good year for free agency. Not really a good year for the draft either, from what most people say. I think you have a lot of good depth in the draft. I think it's not a very top-heavy draft, based on the stuff I've kind of been reading about it. Free agency maybe is kind of similar in that regard. You might see some players who actually will do pretty decent, but won't necessarily kill you on your salary cap with the kind of contracts that they sign. There's a couple positions that are kind of deep in free agency, even if you don't have those superstars that come up. I guess the big thing right now is that you're going to have the franchise tag deadline, so you're going to get those players out of the way right now. There's not a lot of players that will probably get tagged. There's always a couple of surprises. The most logical candidate, obviously, is Devontae Adams. That would be a stunner if he did not get tagged. I think that one would be really, really surprising. I think the other one that would be surprising would be Orlando Brown in Kansas City. Kansas City traded a lot to get him. He played pretty well. As the season went on, he played extremely well. I can't imagine that they would let him get into free agency. I think that's one that pretty much has to get done, one way or the other. Jesse Bates in Cincinnati, I think he'll get tagged there. There might be some questions as to whether or not the Bengals want to do that, but I think that would be a logical option for them. I think Mike Williams with the Chargers. Williams is not a player that most would look at, I think, as a franchise player, but in a weak group of wide receivers this year for free agents, the Chargers need somebody, right? They need players who are going to be there. Keenan Allen is getting older. He's still very effective, obviously, but he's getting older. You have a rookie quarterback. So if you're going to spend a little bit more than maybe you really wanted to, I don't think there's any damage in using the tag on him this year. Dalton Schultz, I guess maybe in Dallas. I think you see a lot of interesting things going on in Dallas right now. I think right now what you're seeing is the eventual end of Amari Cooper. I think that was talked about before. I've talked about that for a couple of years, ever since he signed that contract, that deal was signed basically with 2022 as an escape year. I don't really know exactly what has completely soured Dallas on him. I think they felt they overpaid for him, and they just agreed to do it. He makes $20 million a year. It's a lot. The wide receiver market never actually grew. I think when they signed him, the expectation was that you would have a number of wide receivers by now making $22 or $23 million a year, so he would look more affordable compared to that. But it really didn't happen. Nobody grew off of that market. Nobody looks at the DeAndre Hopkins as a $27 million deal or whatever it is. Julio Jones, maybe they look at it $22, and you've got Keenan Allen at just a little bit over $20. You don't really have anybody else. So he's going to be the second highest paid player at the position this year in terms of cash. I think that really limits his trade value. I think Dallas would have to eat some of that salary in order to trade him. So I think they've just kind of soured on him. I think you're going to see some souring on DeMarcus Lawrence. I think his contract is not really in line for a release. He has a lot of leverage there. I think they'll probably look for some type of pay cut, maybe something similar to what the Browns did with Vernon a couple of years ago, where it's a pretty small pay cut, but it's at least something where they'll pat themselves on the back that they got a little bit of extra relief off of that deal while still keeping him on the team. But I think Dallas right now is at that kind of that time frame where they're looking at their roster, and you're stuck with Ezekiel Elliott, right? You're just stuck with that for the year. There's nothing you can do about it. Bad deal. Chalk it up as that. I think Dallas is looking at this now and saying, okay, what's the next generation of our football team? I know this is getting off the franchise tag discussion, but I think that's one of the reasons I'm bringing it up is because I think they'll tag Schultz. But I think Dallas is looking at, like, what's the next generation for our team? Where can we go? Because we haven't really gone anywhere with this group. And maybe the coach is going to end up being part of that change after this season as well. But I think they're starting to kind of line things up for getting a different roster in place for the future versus doubling down again on these same players and having a roster where you're definitely going to have in 2023 Amari Cooper, DeMarcus Lawrence, and all the same guys who just as a collective group are not getting the job done for Dallas. They play in a very weak division. That kind of inflates sometimes the performance, sometimes inflates the record. And I think Dallas is probably looking at that maybe properly. Enough on the Cowboys. Let's go back to a couple of these franchise tag players. New England will have an interesting decision with J.C. Jackson. If they franchise him, I don't think they'll get a long-term deal done. I don't know if they'll get a long-term deal done anyway. It'll be up to the Patriots to see if they want to do that or not. They may want to go with the franchise tag in this case just because you do have the young quarterback. You're trying to build on what you did last season, and he's an important part of that. All right. Is he a great corner? I can't say. I would say probably not, but he's got this real incredible knack for being in the right place at the right time. And those turnovers that he has are incredibly valuable. And for as much as we want to say that there's a lot of volatility in things like interceptions, his numbers are off the charts pretty much his entire career. So it's hard for me to look at that and say he's going to stop turning the ball over. Like I can look at, this isn't to pick on Rasul Douglas in Green Bay, I can look at him and say, okay, you know, maybe the odds are against him having that kind of impact this year. I can give him a raise. I can give him a lot more money than he got this year, which was the minimum, but I can't justify paying him as a top player. When I look at Jackson, I would probably look at it as a more bullish situation with him. And I might look at that as a player that I can do that with. So I think it would make sense for them to probably tag him, whether they do it or not. I don't know. But I do think that would make sense for them to do. Gesicki in Miami, that's probably going to happen as well. You're looking to keep some players there on offense. They don't have a lot of skill guys. They're trying to develop Tua. That might be easier said than done, but they have a lot of cap room, so they very clearly can do that. I'm sure this is going to lead to one of those debates as to whether or not he's a wide receiver. More often than not, I think the players typically lose those arguments, but they have enough cap room to where, quite honestly, it really doesn't make a difference one way or the other as to what he does. Cam Robinson in Jacksonville, he was tagged last year. I would guess there's a chance that they'll tag him again this year. Tampa Bay, they might tag their corner, Carlton Davis. He's one of those kind of iffy ones. Again, these are players who probably wouldn't get tagged in many seasons, but I just think the lack of available players to replace them with, you might just go with the tags for these guys for 1 year. I guess Seattle with Diggs, I guess, is a possibility as well. Landry in Tennessee. Tennessee's got some stuff to do there. I don't think the Saints will tag Armstead. I don't think they'll tag Williams again. I just don't think they have the kind of cap space to do those kind of things, even though the safety tag is low, even with Williams getting back to backs. I don't think that they'll do that. I think an interesting one might be Hassan Reddick in Carolina. I'm pretty sure that they can tag him again this year, or tag him for the first time this year. Normally I wouldn't say they were going to do that, and they let his contract void out which means that they did take on a dead money charge for him of, let me see how much, $4 million. So it was probably a $3 million acceleration. Let me see how much that acceleration was, how much it cost him by not getting an extension done. Let me take a quick look at that and let me see, because all I see is his dead money here. I don't remember how many dummy years they threw on it, but I think they went for the full amount. Yeah, so they lost an extra $3 million by letting that deal void out if they're still looking to do a contract with him. I could see an outside chance that they'll franchise tag him. Some of the things that they're doing in Carolina there, where they restructured the contract of the right tackle, which kind of surprised me. Not because you didn't want to create cap space, and obviously everyone is linking them to a number of different quarterbacks around the league. But I always look at it like you shouldn't pull those restructure levers until you have to. And I don't believe that Carolina was in any danger of being over the salary cap. I think they were around $10 million or so under. I know I don't have the Ian Thomas numbers, so we're still waiting on those. But you know, let's say that maybe takes off an extra $3 million, $4 million, something like that. Now they're up to $24 million in cap space. And will they use it? Yeah, they probably will use it. So, I mean, maybe it's just an assumption they're going to use it anyway. Kind of something in the back of my mind is saying maybe they're thinking of something with Reddick here that they can do. And that's a possibility. I think that's probably going to be it for the franchise tag players this year. I don't think there's going to be anyone else. Just looking at the teams that have a lot of cap room. I mentioned Robinson. I don't think the Broncos. I don't think the Colts. Washington. Browns could do Clowney. I wouldn't think so. Bears, Raiders. You know, now you get into the teams where they're really going to have to restructure stuff just to be able to tag players. I wouldn't do Chandler Jones if I was Arizona. I don't think I would do that, but they might. They might decide to go there. So I guess we'll wait and see. We'll see. There's always a couple of surprises every year that kind of come through. So I guess we'll see who those players may be. You move forward here, and I'm just looking at a couple of these teams. It's definitely going to be such a weird offseason. It really is. It's just such a weak group of free agents. There's only a handful of teams that are probably going to have a lot of cap space, and you probably don't need to go crazy creating it just simply because of the lack of talent that I think is going to be available. A lot of the best players who will probably be available are going to be third contract guys, and you always have to be cautious with those kind of players. Allen Robinson, Von Miller, Chandler Jones. These are all terrific players. They've had terrific careers. They still play pretty well. Most of them, you know, Miller played extremely well in the playoff stretch. Jones, when healthy, was very good. It's just a question of how many years are you going to get from those players? Are you going to be able to get all those seasons from them? If you're doing a two-year deal, if your window on these players just because of age is only going to be 2 years and you're one of these bad football teams, like if I'm the Dolphins, if I'm the Jaguars, if I'm the Jets, why in the world am I being linked to any of these players other than the fact that I have cap room to spend? Like I just don't see that as being a fit for those teams. Chargers, sure. Bengals, sure. But some of these other teams, I don't know. I just don't see that. Coming out of the combine, kind of sounds like a lot of the quarterback chatter has died down. We have a bunch of nonsense about Aaron Rodgers. It stuff drives you crazy. You know, it just gets a little out of control. The amount of talking points that come out, whether it's from Rodgers himself, whether it's from Rodgers' camp, whether it's from the Packers, it's just ridiculous. You have a report one night that claims Green Bay has trades lined up with like five teams in the NFL. Then you've got another report that says they're not taking anything from Aaron Rodgers or for Aaron Rodgers. And then you've got, so the original report was Pro Football Talk. And then you've got Florio coming back afterwards and talking about how, well, first the decision has to be whether he's going to play in Green Bay or not. And then see what's going to happen. It's like, I thought you just told me they had trades lined up. I don't think he's going anywhere. I think they'll work out what's going to be a very big contract extension for him. And it's going to turn out that Aaron Rodgers basically played the Green Bay Packers like a fiddle when it came to negotiating a new contract. That's really my guess. They gave him a void year. They took away 1 year where he was already scheduled to earn like 23, 24 million, whatever the number was, 26. That would have been baked into a new contract. That's not there anymore. So I think you're going to have a situation where when the numbers come out and he makes his triumphant return to Green Bay in a couple of days, I think that you'll just see some eye-popping numbers. And when you really kind of start looking at it, you're just going to say to yourself, Aaron Rodgers did a tremendous job, love him or hate him. He did a tremendous job in manipulating the Green Bay Packers front office into a monster contract extension when they were arguably looking to get rid of him 2 years ago. Now, the one thing to remember with this is the Packers are under no obligation to trade Aaron Rodgers. So it's kind of a weird thing. The way that Rodgers has portrayed this, and many of the people who cover the league have portrayed it, is that Rodgers has a decision to make, and his decision is, do I play with Green Bay, or do I play on another team? The actual decision is really up to Green Bay. So the actual decision for Rodgers is, am I coming back or am I retiring? He can say, well, I don't want to play with Green Bay anymore, and they can say, well, show up or don't get paid. If it was to get to that, he didn't get some clause in his contract that gives him the ability to force a trade. There's none of that. There's nothing like that in the contract, despite what was said. It was just a situation that sounded more like a gentleman's agreement where they would be willing to move him to certain teams if things went sideways or he really wanted to leave the team and they kind of wanted to move on as well. But I think his leverage comes in doing a new deal with Green Bay, not so much forcing his way out of Green Bay into another contract in another city. He just doesn't have that type of leverage to do that. So it could happen. I'm not saying that it definitely won't, but I think most signs will point to him going back to Green Bay while he just kind of has fun watching everybody talk about him and where he's going to go and how he's going to be in the future. The other one that you hear chatter about now too is Tom Brady. And that was a weird retirement. It really kind of came out of left field, kind of came out of nowhere with all the things that he had been saying about wanting to play until he was 50 or thought he could play until he was 50. Felt good. You didn't really see him really having a big decline this year. I think you could arguably state that this was as good as he has ever been in terms of playing quarterback. And it was just such a hasty retirement. You look at the Buccaneers and you even look at the kind of the fanfare they gave for their guard who just retired. And it's like the Brady stuff just didn't get the type of coverage that you would expect. Like I remember when Peyton Manning got cut from the Colts, it was such a huge news story. It was a huge news story in Indianapolis. That was for certain. I was there when he got cut. And I mean, that took over everything locally and even nationally. And that wasn't even a retirement. That was getting cut from the team that everybody thought he was going to be on forever. And this wasn't that. It was just kind of quiet. And now after his couple of weeks of retirement, the Buccaneers haven't done a thing with his contract. There hasn't been anything to make it better on the salary cap the way the Saints did with Drew Brees in what was clearly a retirement. Hasn't been that. Hasn't been anything at all. And I think people are already seeing that Brady is hedging as to what he wants to do next year. And Brady is contractually obligated to Tampa Bay. Maybe he thought by retiring he would get cut and then he'd be free to go and pick and choose a team. I kind of feel like this is turning into the Brett Favre situation. Brett Favre with Green Bay. And there are things that by retiring, if Brady does not touch that deal, that he can do to maybe impact the Buccaneers. It's a big salary cap number that they have for him before they can put him on a reserve list, retired list. If he's actually retired, that is. He can decide he wants to come back and play. If they have salary cap issues, that would complicate things a lot further if they have to reinstate his contract. So maybe there's some things that he thought he could kind of manipulate that situation to move his way out from there. It's just it's a strange one. This was one where, again, Florio had an article this week that was about how the Buccaneers should just release him. You know, he fulfilled his obligations to them and that they should let him be on his merry way. Now, Brady's contract is guaranteed this year. That's one thing. So they would actually have to negotiate that part out if they were to do that. But the other thing is Brady opted into this. Brady was going to be a free agent in 2022. He opted into a 2022 season. Last year, they redid his deal. They needed salary cap relief. They wanted to take one shot at defending their championship with this group of players. They needed to bring his cap number down to do it. One of the ways they could have done it was simply taking his existing salary, converting it to a bonus, adding void years to the contract, letting him play it out as a one-year deal, and then you would come back this year and see what would happen with him. Instead, he opted into a two-year deal. So instead of the 1 year with the voids, he did two actual years and added three voids. The end result was actually a little bit of a higher salary cap number last year than if he would have done just the regular void provisions. He didn't make a penny more, I don't believe. I think the actual payout terms, there's more promised on this deal if he played this year, but the actual payout terms were the same. Whatever he earned last year is exactly what he would have earned under the old contract. So I have no idea why Brady took that deal. If there was a thought like, well, maybe I don't want to be in Tampa for much longer. Now, maybe he thought things would be different. Maybe he thought by taking that deal and showing that he wanted to give them 2 years instead of one, that maybe that would convince the front office, as well as maybe some of the players, that they should sign maybe multiple year contracts to return. And they didn't really do that. They didn't look to extend any of their players. They're going to lose right now. They could lose their center and their two starting guards. Now, one of the guards obviously is retirement. That one was probably a little bit unexpected. The other one you knew was going to be a free agent. So you had those two in play right there. They couldn't get an extension done with Godwin. You got the cornerback they didn't get an extension done with. You have their safety they didn't get an extension done with. So you kind of see all these things. Maybe now Brady's looking in the mirror. Maybe you start to say to yourself, I thought I just left the Bill Belichick system of I'm taking lesser contracts and somehow every year we're not keeping players. And I have to work on finding ways to get the most out of these teams. I thought in Tampa, the thought was that we were going to have more resources to work with, which they did, you know, through these years. They had Sue on the team, Gronkowski. But again, those are all guys they brought back again just for 1 year. And you look at their salary cap situation and you look at that roster and you say to yourself, this could be closer to a rebuilding project than a contending team. Maybe there's something there that he sees with that as well. Maybe feels that wasn't done properly. But I think that's really an interesting one to watch because I don't think he's 100% retired. I don't even know if he's 50% retired. I don't really know what to make of his retirement that he did. And certainly with the way things have gone right now, what to expect from him and the Buccaneers in the future when it comes to their situation. So I think those are the interesting ones to watch. I think a lot of the other stuff, the talks have already fizzled out on it. Minnesota, I think they're going to double down on Cousins from the sounds of it. I think that's a big mistake for them, but so be it. If that's what they choose to do, that's what they choose to do. I think the 49ers, they might be a little stuck with Garoppolo, so he's going to have shoulder surgery. So until he's healthy, he does have a 7.5 guarantee on that salary this year that San Francisco would have to pay. So they may have to hold on to him for a little bit, depending on what teams might be willing to do. I don't think he has a very big trade market, so I don't think the shoulder injury in that sense really compromises it too much. But I think it was going to be lower picks anyway. I would imagine that they will make some kind of move there, move on from him. Panthers, they'll have to decide to do something there. But you know, the talk on the Cousins stuff, it's interesting. You know, the Vikings Twitterverse is pretty interesting when it comes to Cousins, because obviously he's so polarizing as to what you can and you can't accomplish with a player like that. And I think that actually gets into Stafford with the Rams right now too. There's rumors that Stafford's going to get a $45 million a year contract. That's insane. If you're the Rams, that's insane. I know he just won a Super Bowl. Joe Flacco won a Super Bowl. Oh, well, Matt Stafford's better than Joe Flacco. Okay, sure, he's better than Joe Flacco. Matt Stafford's not a great quarterback. Matt Stafford's not one of the top five quarterbacks in the NFL. You know, you're going to set yourself up for failure if you pay him $45 million a year, I think. When you have substandard quarterbacks, substandard's not the right word, but when you have quarterbacks who aren't elite, who aren't those elite tier players, you have to create more and more avenues to be able to fill in those talent gaps to where the rest of your roster can somehow be better than the teams with these better and more expensive quarterbacks. And that's kind of where things were missed, I think, in Minnesota. Minnesota didn't do the one thing that San Francisco did. You know, you go to a limited quarterback. The one thing that San Francisco did that was really smart with Garoppolo, they have two things, really. One, they made sure it was a longer-term deal. And I think it was a five-year contract right from the start. They made certain that was the case. And they got very creative with the salary cap stuff. What they decided was that they were in the process of rebuilding their roster. They knew they were in the process of rebuilding the roster. And they kind of thought that year one of Jimmy Garoppolo might not be the best opportunity to win. It was going to take some time to build that roster up. You know, whether it was through the draft or free agency or both, however it was going to be. So they structured his deal in a way where they kind of got the salary cap aspect of it all gone in that first year. I'm not saying they conceded the season, but they took a cap hit that year of $37 million, which was a ridiculous number, right? That's a crazy number. But what that did is on the rest of the contract, that brought him down to a reasonable level. 20 million, 26.6, 26.9, 27 this year, basically. So those numbers are at least a little bit more workable. The other benefit of that, so not only do you get the 4 years in a row where those numbers are on the lower side, but because they did a five-year deal, you give an opportunity for the market to make your record-setting contract obsolete, so to speak. So Jimmy Garoppolo was the highest paid player in the NFL when he signed this contract. It didn't last for very long. Cousins surpassed it shortly thereafter. And I think Stafford, jumped Cousins after that. So it might've been Ryan. I don't remember what one of them jumped him right after that. So very quickly, because they got the timing right on this, the market jumped from $28 million a year to basically $35 million a year. And now it's all the way up to low 40s, you call it. So when you look at his cap numbers, 20, 26.6, 26.9, 27, okay, that works in the structure of the NFL. During that time, they left themselves enough time to get out of that. Cousins' contract was different. When you go back to the deal that he signed as a free agent in 2018, so they only did the three-year deal. So it was going to be hard for them to get any back-end benefits on this deal, even though they were paying him top of the line. And they structured the contract opposite. They kind of went for it all that first year. They had a $24 million cap number. Then he jumped to 29. He's at 31 in the third year. They have to redo the deal because the cap number is too high. Redo the deal. Now he's up to $33 million a year. They take the low charge in that first year of the deal, $21 million. Then it jumps to 31. Then it jumps to 45. There's almost no point in the contract other than the first year where they're just doing it to fit within their salary cap structure where you're going to get any benefit on a deal like that. We can all agree that if you look at the NFC North, Kirk Cousins is not materially better than Matthew Stafford. He's probably a little bit worse. Right? For years, Matt Stafford was the quarterback there. And he was more expensive than Matthew Stafford during that time frame. You compare him to Aaron Rodgers. He was probably a little more expensive maybe in one of those years. Let me check out Aaron Rodgers' numbers during there. But we can all agree that he's not as good as Aaron Rodgers. Aaron Rodgers also signed his deal in 2018 at 33.5. So Rodgers' cap hits were 20.9, 29, 21, 27, and then they spiked them up at the end, which is right now. There were restructures along the way, so I shouldn't say that those are the stated numbers. But again, there's no comparison there. And then in Chicago, you had the cheap rookie quarterback. So Chicago was always going to be in a position to build a better roster. So the way that things were done with Cousins in Minnesota, they just didn't give themselves a lot of leeway to really kind of bridge that gap that was going to exist between Cousins and these other high-paid quarterbacks in the NFL who have a better level of talent. You know, they're going to be able to pull their teams to more than Cousins will be able to. Now, maybe Cousins wasn't afforded the greatest of opportunities. There are times where they probably don't let him do enough. Excuse me. Maybe some of that comes from his own style of play. I don't know. But I think they kind of missed the boat with the way that those deals were kind of structured. And I think they just kind of bought into the wrong teams, and they just kind of tried to keep extending with kind of this group of older players. And that's a trap sometimes you fall into with some of these quarterbacks. But when you do have these quarterbacks like a Matthew Stafford, Stafford's great if he's making $30 million a year. What was Stafford's cap hit for the Rams this year? This is one of the reasons why his contract was so valuable for them, was because they had the big number from Goff that was going to compromise them this year. But Stafford was only going to count 20 on the cap. He was only going to count $23 million on the cap this year if they don't do an extension. So there are a lot of benefits to having quarterbacks that have those kind of cap numbers year over year to where you don't have to worry about it, right? Same thing with Wentz. Wentz in Indianapolis. Now, obviously, that went way sideways. But even though Wentz is overpaid, the overpayment came at the hands of Philadelphia. If you look at Indianapolis, Indianapolis is looking at this and saying, we got a good quarterback for cheap, and he gives us a chance to kind of invest in other spots in our roster to get better overall because we're taking on a contract that isn't overpriced relative to the rest of the players anymore. The problem there is just that Wentz isn't any good. So yeah, they didn't get the bounce back they hoped for from Wentz. So they're probably going to end up taking a bigger hit just to move on from him. But I think when you sign these quarterbacks, if this is just going to be the concept of the devil is in the position, that you can't get away from it, maybe that's the case. I don't know. You have to be creative with what you do with the cap stuff on it. You can't do three-year deals. You can't do four-year deals. You got to do 5 and 6-year deals to where there's a chance of a back-end help. Stafford's in a different situation because he's older, but maybe you could still get there anyway. But you've got to do 5 and 6-year contracts, and you got to do some creative stuff with those cap numbers, I think. I think it's okay to look at these teams and every now and then say, you know what? Maybe we do have to sacrifice a year. And maybe there's a way we can do it to where, okay, we're not putting necessarily the best foot forward for this particular season, but we're doing some things with the couple of star players on our roster that we think we can carry for a couple more years. And we're going to make them more affordable on our cap down the line. And that's probably a better way to approach it than going all in on these contract restructures all the time and just piecing it together year after year where it's just like, yeah, the cap is fake. Don't worry about it. We've got this under control this year. Okay, well, what about next year? Don't worry, the cap is fake. Well, you know, we've got it under control this year. Well, you realize you're restructuring the contract of a player who hasn't played in 2 years. Well, yeah, but this year he's going to bounce back and he's going to be a lot better. Last year, didn't he say he didn't even want to be on your team? That's going to change this year. Obviously, that's a reference to Michael Thomas. But that's the kind of situations that sometimes teams find themselves in. I kind of think that's where Minnesota found themselves in, where you got to this point with Cousins where it was like, okay, you should be getting into a cheaper portion of his contract, and instead, he's already going to be a free agent again, and you've structured the cap in a way to where you have to extend him. And you're using these cap savings just to keep your aging team together because you can't get rid of the players because of decisions that you made the year before to try again with the same group. So I think sometimes you just have to have, especially when you have that quarterback there, you just have to be more aware sometimes of the overall ramifications of that big contract or big contracts when you have that player paired with a premium pass rusher who's very expensive. You just have to be really aware of it with the way that you build your team and the way that you construct everything. If you are a team that has a lot of cap room, like the Jaguars or the Jets or the Dolphins this year, Chargers, you can take some risks, all right, in free agency. You can have some swings and misses, and it doesn't really impact you that much because you've got a lot of cap room and you don't have a quarterback that's going to eat up any cap room for quite some time. But once you're on that different side of the ledger, you have to think twice about some of the things you do. And that even goes for like the superstar quarterbacks. Now, yeah, you do have an advantage. If you have Patrick Mahomes, if you have, at this point, you have to say it about Josh Allen. If you have those two players, you have an advantage over teams that are paying $40 million to probably a player like Dak, who's good, but a notch below them, like a clear notch below them. You know, if Stafford were to get to that level, clearly he's a notch below them. So you have a big advantage over players like that, over players like an aging Russell Wilson and Aaron Rodgers. Now, the gap there is a lot bigger, but you have a big advantage over those players, even though you make a lot. But if you are the Chiefs, if you're the Bills, do you have an advantage right now over the Chargers? Do you have an advantage over the Bengals? You don't. You don't have an advantage over these teams that have the rookie quarterbacks. The only advantage that you have over those teams is twofold. One is the long term. You have some stability right now at those two positions. You know what Patrick Mahomes is going to cost you 9-10 years from now. You know what Josh Allen is going to cost you 7 years from now. Those contracts will one day probably become cheap because they were able to do these deals that are just gigantic in length. It's not the Vikings at 3 or the Cowboys at 4. They did these deals that are really big in length. 6 new years for Josh Allen, 8 years total to spread out the cap hits, 12 years total to spread out your cap for Patrick Mahomes. So you do have a long term there, whereas those teams will probably be negotiating deals that might surpass the two players. The only other advantage you have is that a lot of these teams get too conservative with the players on the rookie contract because they want to wait to see if the quarterback has it. Like if I'm the Jets, I watched Zach Wilson last year. Do I think Zach Wilson has it? No, I don't think Zach Wilson has it. Regardless of that, I can't afford to wait for Zach Wilson to prove he's got it before I go and stick my neck out in free agency. I know maybe this is not the best of years to do it because there's not a lot of great free agents on paper, at least. But you know what? You got to do it. Because if Zach Wilson does prove to be great this year and you didn't build that solid roster around him, all you did was cost yourself one season. You cost yourself 1 year, and you've only got 4 years to do it with these guys on the cheap contracts. Now you can structure things in a way to push that to five, maybe, but you would have cost yourself 1 year on that. And it's a vital year, that second year. And then sometimes some teams start getting cold feet in the third year, and it's like, well, I don't want to go crazy in free agency because now I got to save up money to sign my quarterback. So that's one of the things that can benefit teams like the Chiefs as well, is other teams kind of being too risk averse, I guess would be the way to say it. And that kind of costs them when you do things like that. But otherwise, you know, they're at a disadvantage. If you have on paper, if you have an average of what you think will be at least one good quarterback a season coming from the draft. Let's say two good quarterbacks coming from the draft. And by good, doesn't mean they have to be great, just passable. There is such a difference in salary. The top pick in this year's draft we project to be at, let's see, how much will he earn? The number one pick will earn about $11 million a year. It'll be a little under $11 million a year. You're paying $45 a year for a top-line quarterback. So even if Zach Wilson ends up being okay, $11 million versus $43 million for Josh Allen, there's a big difference there. And at some point, Josh Allen's cap hits are going to get somewhat higher, no matter how many times they want to restructure him. At some point, there's a possibility that things really do catch up there. And you're going to be at a very big disadvantage against those teams if they kind of approach things properly. So I think teams sometimes just need to be a little bit more aware when they do these deals with the quarterbacks of how do you manage the rest of your roster once you get this quarterback under contract. And the worst things that you can do, I think sometimes, are just assuming you need to always keep the team together. You got to make hard decisions sometimes with the players and, you know, move on and bring in new talent and find ways to do it and find ways to manipulate everything, you know, to the best of your advantage. So anyway, let's get on to your questions, and then I'm going to call this one a night. So hopefully this will not go on as long. I don't think I have as many questions as the last time, but let's pull them up. Okay, Brett says, a stupid one, but here it goes. How can the Titans and Packers trade quarterbacks and make the money work? Tannehill for Rodgers. So Green Bay obviously would not do that deal. I think what you would probably end up doing in both of those cases, if you really wanted to get that deal done, I think you would have to make both of those contracts kind of cross out in some way, shape, or form. So I think what you would do here, so Tannehill has a cap hit of $38.6 million, and what would it cost for them to trade him? Let me just see what the cost is to trade on their cap, what the debt is on a trade. They have to account for $28.4 on a trade. On Rodgers, they have to account for $26.8. So I think what you would do in both cases, or with a trade like this, I think if you were to agree to this, the first thing that you would do is you would agree to process the trade after June 1st. And I think both teams would agree to pick up kind of an offsetting cost for both players. So in other words, you could lower Tannehill's salary down to the minimum and prorate that money. It's going to impact your dead cap in 2023, but it would give you a chance to bring his cap number down to, let's see what that would be. If you prorated around $28 million over, it would be about $28 million over four. So you would pick up 21, I guess. So you would lower his number by $21 million. So you would create yourself cap room. You would defer the dead money to the following year. Green Bay would do the same offsetting move for Aaron Rodgers on the other side. They would drop his salary down from 26.5 again to 1 million, and they would prorate it out. They would add more void years to do something like that. And his cap number obviously would be big to move him, but if you're going to move him, those numbers are going to be big anyway. So they would probably be able to do something like that. Green Bay would actually be a little bit more restricted. I'm just seeing what their cap numbers kind of look like right now. But I think that would probably be the way to do it. Prepay the contracts for both of those players and go from there. I think that would be the kind of the way to make the numbers work out ahead of time. I think that's one of the things I would explore. Black Gold says, probably outside of your realm of expertise, but who decides which coaches qualify for the Rooney Rule? I think they have a list. He's talking about McDaniels here because, you know, he's quarterback. So I think the league, I think they have a list of people. I don't know what the criteria is. It's probably spelled out in a policy, I would guess. But I believe they give a list to the teams every year as to who would and would not qualify for that. But I think that's how that works. Captain Buccaneer says, do off-ball linebackers count alongside pass-rushing linebackers when determining the franchise tag number? Yes, they do. That's why, more often than not, you never see those type of players get franchise tagged. Now, the salaries have gone up a little bit, you know, in recent years, but they, for the most part, you don't see non-rush linebackers get tagged because of that. Same reason why very often you don't see guards get tagged, and you never, ever, ever see a center get tagged. If they ever tied, like, tight ends to wide receivers, you wouldn't see tight ends get tagged either. Vin says, how bad was the Zeke restructure last year? They were stuck no matter what. So it's like, damned if you do, damned if you don't. You know, the contract just became a mess. That's what it was. They did their best to get a deal done. They needed to get it. Well, they wanted to get a deal done. I'm not saying they needed to get a deal done. They wanted to get a contract done. This was the best that they could come up with, was to do this deal, given what some of the recent contracts in the market had been. They weren't going to be the ones to fight over it. They probably should have been, but he was going to hold out, and they wanted to make sure he was in there. So it wasn't really that big. I mean, it was just an extra $8.6 million that they put on there. The other one was a $13 million option bonus, I believe, the year before. So that was factored in, and that actually had to do more with the rules in play at the time. Now, they probably would have done it anyway. But I think in this case, it made it a little worse, but it didn't make it so much worse because his salary was already guaranteed for this year. It was just a very difficult one, I think, to deal with because of whatever they did at the time. It just didn't work out for them. So they're stuck. And they were going to be stuck regardless of whether or not they did that. It's just easier to pick on right now. Just don't sign running backs. I mean, that's the bottom line. You can't be the team that says, not my guy. It's not going to happen to my guy. It's going to happen to your guy. And if you don't do a good job with the contract, if you don't put your foot down on it, you're going to get stuck with an albatross that you can't get rid of. So you can't say it's not going to happen to my guy. You know what? If you lose him and it turns out that he's the one, take the criticism for it, because 95% of the time you're going to be right and your team is going to be better off by just going back in the draft or back in the undrafted free agency and just grabbing a couple of guys there and seeing who pans out. Costa says, generally speaking, what type of contracts provide the most return on investment for a team? Whether it's in regards to length, annual value, quality, age, position of the player. So I think in general, what you want to look for, it's very position dependent. But I think when you're looking at quarterbacks and you're looking at offensive linemen, I think what you want to look at is length of the contract. You will get much more of a return on investment when you can get contracts that are 5-6 years in length, whether that's New Year's on an extension, whether it's in free agency. I think that's the kind of stuff that you want to get. I think when you're looking at an ROI for most of the other positions, I think it really has to do more with what are your best out strategies in a contract. And I know that sounds a little weird if we're talking about getting a return on a contract that we're already talking about, well, how do you get out of it? I think when you know you have outs in a contract, one, it makes it easier to look at the rest of your roster and not worry. It's one of the things, like if you use the Amari Cooper one even as an example. Dallas, I'm sure when you look at their cap situation, you say, well, yeah, their cap situation's pretty bad. I'm sure they always looked at this as like, okay, well, our cap situation is $16 million better than what it says right now because we can move on from Amari Cooper, and we're probably going to move on from Amari Cooper. So I think having that type of flexibility, I think actually gives you a better chance to get a good return on a player. Otherwise, I would say for some of these mid-grade players, I would say trying to get to a three-year deal is advantageous. I think a lot of teams do not. I think they go to two-year deals, and some of those players outperform and end up getting another contract. And I think I'd rather have those players for three right off the bat. I think it gives me a little bit better opportunity to kind of hold off on another extension for them, I think at least. But I think mainly it's just looking at the length of the contract and the position of the player, which really determines more as to what kind of return you're going to get. Vin has another question here. Thoughts on who will get the most regrettable contracts this go around? That's a good one. So I think of your top players, I think Armstead, the left tackle, is very risky because of the injury history. I think that could be a player where you have a lot of people talking about a paperweight. He may be great. He's a great player. He's got a lot of talent. But I could see some people, I could see a lot of opportunities for that to come in at a big number because of the position he plays, but maybe not a great return if he keeps getting hurt a lot. Marcus Williams probably is going to get a pretty big contract as a safety, and it's probably going to be above what he would give another team. I think that's a possibility. He's a good player, but I think sometimes teams will go out of their way. The Jamal Adams syndrome, you sign a player for $15 million a year thinking that they're going to change the defense, and all they did was give you a improvement at a position, not really an improvement of a unit. And I think that might be something that happens there. Allen Robinson, I could see being a disappointment. I think those are the, like, I don't think Gilmore is going to get a big deal. I don't think Davis is going to get a big deal to where he becomes, you know, someone that becomes a concern. Let's put it that way. I don't think anyone else. So many of the best free agents are older this year that I don't know. I just don't think there's going to be that kind of bullishness on some of the players. I don't think you're going to get the Galladay stuff. I don't think you're going to get the Leonard Williams deals. I know that one technically wasn't a free agent one since he was tagged. But I don't know. I just don't think you're going to get some of those same deals this year. Curious, does the current CBA allow for the Bobby Bonilla type of contracts or other out-of-the-box contracts? No, they pretty much specify payment terms. So you're not going to get away with doing like some annuity payments or something where you don't start making payments until, I don't know, 2042 or something like that. That's not going to fly in the league. You can defer salary a little bit to some extent, but there's no real major deferments like that allowed. Buster says, what would the 2022 cap hits look like for Gallup and Gregory if signed the Cowboys to fair market deals, considering how the Cowboys normally construct their contracts? I'd have to look a little closer at Dallas to see how they did that with players who they signed as free agents. Because really, you see, it's hard to compare because more often than not, when you extend a player, there's a lot more leeway in what you can do with the cap hits. So if you look at Amari Cooper as an example, they just went straight line. So it would basically almost be like you're just matching whatever the annual value of those deals are. So let's say Gallup was going to sign for 10, you would expect something like 8, 12, 12 on the cap hits, something like that. And I think my math was a little funky there. So that's probably off there. I think I said 8, 12, 12. So no, that'd probably be 8, 11, 11 or something like that. So I would guess that's what it would be. But I don't know for certain on that. I'd have to take a closer look at the couple of players they've done that with. But I don't think there's been many players. So I think you would see kind of straight line on some of those. Michael says, how long are teams signing, extending star receivers going to be able to ignore the Hopkins contract? How close does anyone get? I think that one can be ignored for a very, very, very long time. The situations there were very different. It's two new years. It's not a long-term deal. Arizona had no skin on the prior contract. They didn't pay a penny on it. He didn't play a down on that contract. He had complained he wanted a new contract in Houston, which is why Houston got rid of him, because they didn't want to give him a raise. That's a big reason why. So I think everybody around the league looks at that deal as like an $18 million a year deal or $17 million a year deal. So I don't think anyone is going to pay that any attention. If it's going to happen, it's going to happen this year with Devontae Adams. But otherwise, the market's barely moved for wide receivers. Free agency's been a bust for wide receivers. So I think it's going to be some time before we actually see a real long-term deal past that number, unless Adams does it this year. I don't believe Adams will, but I won't completely rule it out, only because while the Tunsil one was a little different because he did play a year there, the Packers clearly gave credibility to that Tunsil deal when they did Bakhtiari. So there's a little argument, at least, that they can make there. But I don't think that they'll pass that, and I'm not even sure if that one will come up. Justin says, curious, what do you think a Derwin James contract will look like? Does he top Adams or get a little less because of the injury history? So I think James will have two things working against him. One is the injuries. So he has to have another year where, you know, he's going to be injury free, I think. I know he's only had the he's missed, what did he miss? He missed 2020, and he missed most of 2019. So I think he's going to have one more year, I think. Before that happens, the tag numbers are reasonable for that position, so he can always just get tagged. I don't know. I think the other thing that works against him is, to be honest, the Jamal Adams contract. The Jamal Adams deal is just going to be looked at as so lousy because he's just not going to give you that return that I think that teams are going to be hesitant to pay that position up to that level. Landon Collins contract's kind of the same way. So I think that's what he'll aim for. But I think given the numbers that are there, I think you would be better off if you were the Chargers to just go tag, and then let him leave in free agency. Just my opinion, but I think that would be the case. But I think the Adams contract should be looked at by the rest of the league very carefully and say, do we really want to be spending $17 million on a safety, even a really, really good one? Connor says, what would your assessment be of Brandon Linder's contract? It's one of the rare ones that might be played out. Good for the player, good for the team, both injuries, but always good performance. It's been fun. You know, he was a player when he was signed. I know most of the players in the league, not because I watch all the teams play, but just from doing the contract data. And even when he signed, I think my reaction was, who? It was like, what? Like, I was very surprised at the deal they gave him. He's been okay with it. The center's always interesting. A lot of teams talk about it being a very important position. A lot of people talk about it as really being kind of the glue of the offensive line. But you look at the way teams approach it, and you look at the differences sometimes in performance and salaries. I think you can make a very strong argument that you should always either have a rookie contract player at center, or you should be going lower cost at center and just finding an adequate guy for a couple million dollars a year rather than playing up at 10 or 11. Whatever Linder's at is probably right at that level. So I think that there's a lot of questions that you can kind of ask yourself as to what makes the most sense as to how to approach that position. But if you're Jacksonville, I don't think you've regretted that contract. I just think you can look at it overall from an overall perspective and say, well, would there have been a better use of money than what they necessarily did there? But I don't think they're disappointed with it. Deadstroke says, Miguel noted that Detroit and Dallas year-end adjustments, insurance proceeds. Is insurance common? Is it purchased out of signing bonus or base salary? How does it work? So it's purchased out of both. In the past, when players didn't have these large guaranteed salaries, typically it was just purchased on the signing bonus. And the way that would work is the teams would recover the money. They have an insurable interest in the player. And they would go back and they would reduce the overall signing bonus based on that. So let's say that the player had a signing bonus and there was an insurance let's say he had a $25 million signing bonus, and let's say he missed an entire year on it and they had the whole thing covered. So they would get like a $5 million credit. So the league would actually go back in there and they would revalue that signing bonus as if the signing bonus was worth $20 million. And so the cap hits each year would change accordingly. And for the years that had passed, excuse me, you would get a credit, like a bigger credit for that in that 1 year. So, for example, let's say that the player, this was the third year of his contract, and he missed that. So the straight line depreciation would change on that contract from $5 million a year to $4 million a year, because now you're based on the 20. So for this year and the following year, it would be $4 million in proration. The other $3 million that was unaccounted for would be an adjustment to the salary cap in this season, because you're basically that's the money that you paid on the cap, and now you just got it back to you. So now it's being refunded to your cap as an adjustment. When it's paragraph 5 salary that's being insured, you get that all that following year. So if you have a player who has $10 million of his P5 insured, and you recovered all $10 million in 2021. In 2022, you would get a top line adjustment to your salary cap of $10 million. You would get it all at once. It's not prorated over the course of the contract, because it was all based on money that was supposed to count on the cap in 1 year versus being prorated over the extent of the contract. It's not super common. It used to be much more common. I think it's becoming more common now because the guarantees are getting bigger and bigger, especially for free agent signings, where those players get these guarantees that run into the third year, and they're just really big. So I think when you look at quarterbacks, when you look at defensive ends, the handful of edge rushers, not defensive ends, the couple of interior defenders that are at like $20 million a season, I think those are the players where you're seeing insurance taken out, maybe left tackles. I think those positions, I think of the other positions, it's less likely that you're going to see it. And then it's just going to depend on how often you see players get hurt as to whether teams decide that they should do more than that. Connor says, does Jimmy G shoulder injury mean the 49ers can't cut him until he heals? No, it doesn't mean that, but he does have injury protection. So, you know, you don't want to get into the whole process of that stuff. So they'll probably hold on to him until that occurs, but they're not obligated to pay anything more than that 7.5 injury guarantee. So they, it's not like his entire salary is protected for the year. Brian says, guess Cooper's market value if cut. Where does he versus A-Rob versus Godwin stack up? So I would guess he'd probably be looked at something like $14, $15 million a year. I haven't given it like a lot of thought or anything, but I would guess that would be the market that teams would look at for him. I think it would be very similar for Robinson. If I had to rank those three players, now Godwin's coming off injury, so that one is a little trickier to kind of predict. And I think Godwin might get tagged, but I think if all things were equal, if you weren't dealing with injury, I think Godwin would go number one. I think Cooper would be two and A-Rob would be three. I think if Cooper gets cut and given the injuries right now, I think Cooper is one, Robinson. It's an ACL. You know, Godwin might be two, and then Robinson might be three. That might actually be how they end up stacking up, even with the injury. Brian says, if a team elects to pay incentives, even if the player doesn't earn them, do they count against the following year's cap? I'm trying to think of a way for the Rams to keep Odell Beckham and pay for his services. So if they're going to pay them, what the teams end up doing is they renegotiate the contract to include a signing bonus. So the Eagles, I think, were the first to really do this a lot. It might have been the Patriots, but I think it was the Eagles. But basically what you would do is, let's say that a player missed out on earning a $1 million bonus because he missed 10 snaps. All right. What you would do the following year, or that same year, if you knew he was going to miss it at that point in time, in February or March, you would redo the deal to include a $1 million signing bonus that would basically cover what that incentive was. Now, it would prorate over the remaining term of the contract, but you would be paying it out. So that's how you make the player whole for missing the contract incentive. So That's the way that you would do something like that if you wanted to. So I don't think that would really apply to Beckham in this case, given the injury and everything else. But that's one of the ways that you can do that. If you were looking to kind of delay that. Let's see, what will a Minka Fitzpatrick contract look like? Guaranteed years? Have you followed the GM search? No, I really haven't followed their GM search. It's kind of it's a weird one because they have so much other stuff going on. I kind of get the feeling like their GM search is just interviewing guys to get an idea for what other teams are doing versus actually looking to hire from outside of the organization. That's just kind of my feel for it. I think the Steelers will push back on the guaranteed years. They'll probably end up caving in on them. But I think Fitzpatrick will get a top market deal, $16 million a year, something like that. Is probably where he'll be. They'll probably offer a big signing bonus, roster bonus second year, and try and get off that guarantee structure. But they might give in on that too. I don't know as to how that'll be. You'll probably touch on the Cowboys wide receiver situation anyways, but if you don't, I'd like to know what type of contract you'd expect for all three of them and how Dallas should have handled the situation. So I think with the wide receivers here, I think they'll cut Cooper. I if it was me, I would probably look to trade him and look to see what it would cost for me to trade him. If I eat $5 million of his salary this year, can I get a pick for him? Because I think I would do that. Teams might be a little concerned because they might not want the back end of the deal at 20 as well. So I don't know if that will happen. I think they will cut him. Should they cut him? I don't know. I think that's iffy. I don't know. I like Gallup. I think Cooper's better than Gallup. I think the question just becomes, is Gallup at half the price and what you hope will be 2 years out of him, they're probably hoping 3 years out of him, is that more beneficial than whatever you get from Cooper this year for the extra money? and what you assume is still going to be declining production the following year, even if you can bring his salary down the following year to make it a little bit more reasonable. If I was Dallas, I'd probably just approach him on a pay cut, but I don't think that's going to happen. You know, Gallup probably is going to get in that $13, $14 million a year range, I would guess. Right along like the Cortland Suttons of the world and that kind of stuff. Wilson should be a level below that. I don't know what that number will be. I think Dallas probably could have offered him a solid deal last year. You know, that wouldn't have been too expensive if they wanted to keep him. I think the same could have been said for Gallup. They probably could have. Well, you know, once you saw Sutton come in where he came in at, I think at that point you probably should have just been like, all right, we'll do the same deal for you. You know, just get it out of the way, just get it done with. Maybe even tried to get in ahead of that. But I understand the questions that they might have had with it. I can't say that they completely mishandled it. I don't think that's the case at all. But usually when you do see teams sign a player back again on the eve of free agency, you kind of wonder, well, why didn't you do it before? And you might have had a little bit more leverage before. So that's just something that I usually think of with that when I see that kind of stuff happen. But I can't say that it was necessarily a really bad decision for them, the way they've done this. All right, last set of questions here. What's the name of the podcast? Over the Cap Podcast. Just curious what you think, Derwin. Oh, this is the one from before. Apologies if I haven't been able to find an easy answer, but can I ask how UDFA contracts are applied against the team's cap? So the same way as anything else. The players have a paragraph 5 salary. They have a signing bonus. So typically they're going to be outside of the top 51. So the only thing that's going to count right now would be the signing bonus proration. But if they make the team, their full salary counts against the cap, as does their signing bonus. They are part of the rookie pool, but basically it's just the signing bonus portion that counts against the rookie pool. So there is a very small charge that's allotted to them. So it limits the amount of signing bonus money that teams can give to players in a given year. That's one of the reasons why I've seen undrafted guarantees go up, but signing bonuses go down. Derek says, how much time do you think a GM head coach should be given? The NFL has a turnover problem that seems to be linked to the QB roster talent pool. Do you think that last playoff spot gives new front offices a chance to survive if they reach the 7th seed within 3 years? Yeah, I think the addition of a playoff spot is probably going to see teams hang on to general managers and coaches for a year too long now, because people are going to look at earning that playoff spot as like earning something major. And most of the time, that's really not the case. I think in general, 3 years is probably enough for coach, head coach, general manager to figure out exactly how things are going, unless you inherit a situation like Atlanta, where you really have like a major, major hole to climb out of. So I think that's kind of the rare case where that occurs. But at the same time, I think there are clearly things you can evaluate after 2 seasons. You can see things that they're doing with the roster. You can see, did the roster improve? Did the roster get worse? What are they doing with their contracts? How have the things gone there? Like they... It was iffy, you know, using the Jets as an example. It was probably iffy when they fired John Idzik after 2. He wasn't well liked around the building. He wasn't well liked outside of the building. He couldn't handle the media whatsoever. The team got worse with him there. The only thing that you could say is if he had a plan, which he said he had a plan, he would always talk about the plan. That it was a plan that worked in Seattle. So yeah, Seattle lucked into a plan, but that it was the plan. He's seen the plan work. Yeah, that was kind of his thing that he was saying. You probably could have made an argument, but I think the other things were so overwhelming against him that it was harder. It was easier to fire him after 2 years even if it wasn't completely deserved. Same thing goes for a coach. You could tell from Adam Gase, there was no connection with those players. He was someone who had obviously failed before at another job. And you could see that it just wasn't the right fit whatsoever. And you can see when some of these younger coaches are overcome by the situation. Patricia in Detroit, he was clearly in over his head. And you could tell that very quickly, that in over his head. So I think you can, it's not the most fair thing in the world after 2 years, but I think you can kind of make a decision. But I think 3 years is definitely more than enough to, definitely decide. But I would put almost no weight on getting a 7 seed. And I certainly would not do what Arizona did by extending their coach and general manager because you made the playoffs one time. Everybody makes the playoffs. Everybody and anybody can have a season where you happen to win 11 games and you're the talk of the town for a little while and you do well. Anybody can do it. Even the Jets could do it. I don't know when. Even the Jets. But anybody can do it. The question is, can you do it consistently? And it's not smart to see it happen once when it's been a lot of losing, and you look at that roster, in Arizona in particular, and you see an old roster. You see a roster that's always filled with one-year contracts where you're just piecing it together. Stumbles to the finish line. Say, well, they had bad injury problems. Part of the reason they have bad injury problems is because they're an old football team. You got a bunch of old guys playing football, you're going to have injuries. You didn't have any depth to cover for injuries. That's not the fault of Magic. That's the fault of the general manager. So, I think that happens way too often, but I think it's going to happen a lot with the 7 seed, and that's crazy to me. How much do you think Honey Badger can grab on the open market? And do you see that position being one the Jets address in free agency versus the draft? They don't have much there. I think they'll address in free agency. I don't think they'll go top market on that. I don't. I think that will, I don't know. I think that'll leave a bad taste with whatever happened with Marcus May and Adams as well. Even though Adams kind of barked his way out, I'm not sure how much it'll reflect on that. He's going to get a big deal because he's going to look for beating the Harrison Smith contract. I don't know if it'll be the Adams deal, but he'll certainly get over 16 a year. He'll find a team that's willing to do it. I don't know what that team will be. Maybe it'll be Kansas City. But you know, I think he'll find a team to do that. Kane says, what other players can the Panthers restructure to free up more cap room? Let's see. Let's take a look at the Panthers real quick here. I should just be able to bring up Nick's chart too. Let's see. Where's the restructures table? So players with a big salary. So you could gain some cap room with Shaq Thompson, Robbie Anderson, Christian McCaffrey. Those would be the main ones. There's some others that can do it. So let's see, where does Nick have them? So through simple restructures, they can get to about $40 million in cap room. If they max out, meaning they add void years to guys like Darnold, which don't do that, you could reach 63. So I think their legitimate numbers to get to are probably around $40 million in cap room. And it's probably looking at Thompson and Anderson, or I guess trading away Anderson is something that is kind of being brought up right now. Rumored. I shouldn't even say it's being brought up. I guess rumored. But I would guess that's about where they can get through just through restructures is around 40. When the potential cutting of players gets leaked, does that completely kill the ability to trade the player? No, that actually is something that teams do in hopes of getting someone to call them and be like, hey, we're interested in this guy. Because sometimes you don't know that a player is going to get cut. Sometimes it blindsides you. Like the Raiders last year when they cut some of their offensive linemen, I think they ended up making a trade to get a couple of those players out of there. So you end up getting some type of asset in return by doing that. So that's part of the reason why you leak it. You try to get that media coverage of it to really get you to pay more attention to it. Nick says, what happens to a player under contract if he retires, sits out a year, then returns? Does his contract toll for the year he missed? Yes, that's exactly how it works. So the contract basically goes on pause, and then it gets reinstated and pushed forward. Josh says, with vet contracts not being able to be renegotiated with new money for at least a year after signing, how often do they get simple restructures to clear cap space in year one? It happens a lot. So you can do those. You can renegotiate stuff. You can renegotiate the cap number down without a problem. So it does happen from time to time in the first year. And the other stuff, teams have found ways around those rules that I didn't really even know existed. Not the down rule, just the ways around them. Really, it was until the Marshall and Lynch extension. Whatever year that was, 14, somewhere in that ballpark. And I was really surprised. I didn't think they were allowed to do what they did, and they were able to do it. So you kind of learn something every day. I always say that with the salary cap stuff. You learn something new all the time with the way these are approached. This is a question about who would the Jets take in the draft, and I don't know. I don't know enough about any of the players to say, but no, I would agree with Mike here. We don't want a safety. I agree 100%. We do not want a safety in the draft, not in the first round. David says, what are the key points on this agreed if he wants it trade of Aaron Rodgers and Tannehill? I have not read anything on that. So I don't know. I don't really even know what that would be. So I can't say trade if he wants it, just because I didn't read that part of it. But I would guess that means if he wants to go to Tennessee, Tennessee will find a way to make it happen. I would guess. Jets 404. Will the Rams and Saints cap ever catch up with them? So the Saints one already has. All right, they're losing players that normally they probably would have rather they keep. And they don't have a quarterback. So I think the Saints one is clearly already caught up with them. It's just a question as for how long that it lingers there for. The Rams, right now the Rams aren't in that terrible of a salary cap situation. I think that it's been overblown. So the Rams have traded away a lot of players. It's... Look, if the Rams have an issue, the Rams' issue is probably going to be more roster-related than salary cap-related. Their issues are going to be more in the future because they didn't have draft picks at the top that if they don't hit home runs with some of these mid-round picks that they get a lot of, they're probably going to fall into some hard times. But I don't think it's going to be cap-related. Now, maybe do a $45 million contract for Stafford. Maybe something happens there. But I think they have a lot of flexibility with their roster as to who they can move, who they can restructure, where those players are. So I think the thing to look at more with them is more the roster itself versus the salary cap situations there. I think it's theirs is like a little bit different. So I think that's probably what I would say there. All right. So I think that's it for me. And I think that is... Yep, that's all the questions. Sorry if I missed anything in my email. I may have gotten something in my email during the week. And I think I missed it. I don't see... I feel like there was a question on Parsons or something. I'll cover it next week. I'll try to dig it up. I'll do a better job of digging up the questions and being able to jump into them next week. So sorry if I missed something that was emailed over. So, all right, everyone, have a great week. Hopefully I'll be back on a Saturday night, so we can have a beer or two together. So everybody have a great week, and I'll talk to you all again soon.